This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, I'm Lim Soon Heng and you're listening to Front Row and the Bigger Picture. An art exhibition opens today at our art projects at the Zhongshan Building of Jalan Atap in Kuala Lumpur. It is a debut solo exhibition by Mark Tan, who has in the past exhibited in Singapore, Indonesia, France and the United Kingdom, and most recently at Taksu in KL in Singapore. More than 80 prints and drawings by the artist completed between 2013 and 2017 are on display. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you for having me.
First time seeing you, first time meeting, you look like some schoolboy. Everybody that comes in the studio, I think it's some schoolboy.
It's okay, I get that a lot.
I am interested to find out from you, what part of your early education has led you to this job, this career, this vocation, this calling, whatever you want to name it?
Funny enough, you know, since I was young, I wasn't into art that much. It wasn't like, you know, oh, I started art at five and, you know, I did go into competitions and stuff, winning things, was really good at drawing and things. It wasn't like that. But I did take art lessons when I was, say, I was 7 to 8 years old during my primary school days and up into my early secondary school days. And
this was in school itself?
No, it was actually after school activities, actually. And yeah, but I never thought much of it, to be honest. Like, I wouldn't say like, yes, like, you know, through these classes that I will be an artist in the future. It wasn't like that. It was until actually quite recent when I actually went to uni and decided to think like, okay, this is what I really want to do and this is what I would dedicate my, you know,
so it's a much later
my attention
discovery.
To.
Yes. Much later
yeah,
discovery.
That, yeah, pretty much.
What happened while you were at uni that said, you know, this is what I want to do? Because so what did you start doing when you first went to university?
I went to a course called Drawing Applied Arts, which is quite similar to Fine Art in the UK. And in that course, what I really liked about it, it sort of encouraged me to basically have the freedom to explore things that you are really curious about and what you're really interested in. So, you know, just typical uni course modules, we get ourselves exposed to many different types of art techniques, like different kinds of workshops. And we would then sort of go off on our own and discover which techniques suits us best that, or like we really would like to explore. And then, which for me was printmaking, which we'll talk a bit more later, of course. And I sort of like felt like a connection to the technique. Then I sort of just, you know,
the process itself, yeah, the process was itself. Interesting.
And then it sort of just got me into it. I just got hooked.
But you know, when you sign up to go to the university, it was already in something that's pretty close to fine arts.
Yes.
That kind of a direction was as far from your mind when you were going to school.
Yeah.
You did art when you were in primary school, but it was more like a weekend activity. It was after school. What made it serious enough for you to go to the university to continue at least studying it?
You know, funny thing, you know, just typical student experience that, like, you know, after A-levels, you sort of get a bit lost. You sort of think like, oh my God, like, what should I do after this? But yeah, for me, it was quite a clear path that I would be in the creative industry. It's just at that time, I don't know which one yet. So
when you said the creative industry, what do you mean?
Before this, I grew up in a musical environment because my mom owns a music school in Ampang. And that's, growing up, course, exposed me to like many types of different creative art forms, performing arts, music, and of course, fine arts as well. And so it sort of gradually built up along the way as I grew up. And I sort of like, you know, felt that I sort of have a strong feeling that I would be in the industry as well in the future. So like I say, at that time, I don't know yet which one.
But music, while it's in the arts, music and visual arts are quite poles apart to some extent, simply because one would require more your ocular skills as opposed to your oral skills.
That's right. Sad to say that I'm not a talented musician, la, so like, you know, you go to arts. No, but I mean, of course I have the privilege to play several instruments. And of course, I would say that helped me approach my art practice right now in some ways. But even though playing with the instruments, you know, like, you sort of know that you have that sort of, that some sort of calling. It's like, yes, you know, when you play instrument, like, this is what I'll do for the rest of my life. For me, it wasn't like that. I was more interested in the poetic elements, in the sense that you're like visualizing things. Even when I was playing the instruments, I feel myself, I'm more in tune into that kind of stuff. So I, especially
so, like, so the sound of music created images for
yes,
you.
Yes, that's right. Pretty true. So as I grew older, so like, I'm more interested into the compositional bit of music, like how especially composers compose their music, how they grab inspiration from, you know, whatever strikes them and translate them into music through their, you know, writing out the notations and expressing their ideas. That was the part that I found myself quite drawn into, instead of, you know, physically playing instruments.
I mean, I was quite facetious when I said that, you know, music is oral and visual arts, of course, is ocular. But, you know, some would say, and I really believe it's true too, that if you listen to music closely, what happens is you start to see in your mind's eye whatever the music does. And of course, you also feel it right in here. Mm-hmm. At what juncture, like you say, you were at the university, this course on different processes, and you kind of connected with one of the ways of creating art. And because of that, you said, okay, I want to do that. But to think of going into this full time, 24/7, what led to that?
It's sort of just, I feel like it comes in quite naturally for me, actually. Like, of course, I don't mind doing it full-time, is what I'm trying to say. And it doesn't switch off, you know. The funny thing is, like, especially for this kind of stuff, like art, because you never know, like, when inspiration hits you. So every time, whenever I'm out, or even, like, out of, like, quote-unquote, like, the corporate or, like, office setting, my mind will always keep going, like, thinking about ideas, thinking about what strikes me, or, like, even a walk around town, that itself inspiring enough for me to get ideas to work with. And yeah, so like if you're saying like, oh, Mark, do I have like a set routine in the sense that you start your work at 8 and then you finish at 5 and you just switch off your artist mode and, you know, just relax and chill? Like, no, well, it doesn't work like that for me. It sort of, it goes on and on and on and on and on.
You're always watching.
Yes.
Things are always stimulating you and you're always asking questions. Who influenced you into this kind of life?
I think, like I say, it relates a lot back to my background. I think growing up in a music school, you get yourself exposed to a lot of different creative individuals, and each creative individual.
People in your life that
they
kind of pushed you in different directions.
It's really interesting to see how they, you know, each one has their own methodology, each one has their own approach to, you know, music making or even like performing arts, and of course visual arts.
For people who have not seen your work and just for the first time hearing your voice on air, how would you explain yourself as an artist? What kind of artist are you?
I don't know, really. I mean,
do you sit down
in general? I think.
Do you sit down and say, okay, you know, what am I doing?
Pretty much every day. I think people use art in many different ways. You know, some use them for education, some use them for therapy, some use them for, you know, self-fulfillment, self-enjoyment. For me, I think it's more about investigating ideas and concepts and exploring them and translating them through ideas in a way, like expressing them visually. That's what I'm trying to say. So it's like I say, relating back to my interest in composers. So it's pretty much the same thing, actually. Like, you know, a composer would sort of have inspiration and ideas that they want to express, and they would then write them down on, like, the manuscript, and, like, it's all in the form of notation. So for me, like, it's, in a way, I feel myself no different from, like, a composer writing down my ideas and thoughts, but it's just, like, a different way through, like, shapes and forms.
So shapes and forms take the shape of notes on a manuscript.
Yeah, in some ways you could say that.
So we have to kind of read that and play it in our head through the shapes and shades and then come to some kind of a understanding or appreciation of what you do. Do you feel that there is an obligation on your part as the person who has done the creating to help us understand what the heck is going on in all those shapes and shades?
I mean, I'm sure this is, everyone knows that art is very subjective. Everyone responds to things differently. Of course, as the creator, I would say, like as the artist, I'm always here to guide you, guide the viewer, to like, lead them on into certain points that, you know, triggers in their mind that would sort of once again lead them into their own interpretation. But I'm not here to sort of enforce saying that, oh, like, you should only look at my art in this way. This shape represents solely this thing. Not like that, but it's more like I said, leading the viewer into their own interpretation.
At what point in your creation do you admit the audience? Let me rephrase the question. I assume when you start your work, maybe with some body in mind or some people in mind, writers, I think, if you're writing very factual kind of stuff, you're always aware of who you're writing for because you have your choice of vocabulary and all of that. For you, at what juncture does the audience come into play?
The audience comes into play, I think, when it comes to... it's more towards the exhibition setting. It's like it, when it comes to putting up the artworks, you're thinking about how I would want to display and show the viewer in a manner that relates to my idea and my concept. So when it comes to exhibition time, I would work with a curator, and this time is with our arts project. And we sort of, you know, have many discussions about how we want to display the work, how we want to frame the work so that it sort of enhances the experience for the viewer to get their own ideas and interpretation from the work to the best that they can.
I'm speaking with Mark Tan, who is holding his debut exhibition of prints and drawings titled Arrangements. This exhibition opens today at our art projects at the Yongshan Building in Kampong Atap. Coming up, we'll get him to talk about his works in this exhibition. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You're tuned to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, speaking with a young artist, Mark Tan, whose exhibition titled Arrangements opens today at our art projects at the Yongshan Building. You said you like printmaking partly because it suited you, your style.
That's right.
What about your style that somehow says to you that this is the work? I assume you don't use the brush too much based on what you do.
For me, like... I felt printmaking relates a lot to my interest in memories, which is quite prominent in this exhibition. But like I say, I'm an artist, and like, I like to explore everything, you know, especially both ends of the spectrum. And I pretty much do everything, but solely because of my prints, people sort of know me as Mark, like, you know, the printmaker. And there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, hopefully as my career builds on, and like the more exhibitions, people will see like a diversity in terms of technique and approach to my art making.
What exactly is printmaking? Because the first thing that some of us will think about is photographs, you print. Take pictures, you have negatives, you print. Now with digital, the printing is quite different.
actually, you know, photography and digital printmaking right now is pretty much the sort of the most advanced stage of printmaking. But printmaking, and especially fine art printmaking, it's just really the whole idea of transferring an image onto a surface. The whole basic concept is that. And in terms of going back, going way back in, I think it started in China, where they would carve wood blocks and print them onto paper. I think that's the first form of publication. And it sort of, you know, throughout the times and years, it got, you know, into exposed to different countries and different regions, different parts of the world. Somehow just artists sort of just got onto the technique as well, and just, you know, instead of making solely for publication purposes, they sort of use that technique for art.
In your works in this exhibition called Arrangements, what kinds of prints did you create?
For me, I got the privilege to access a really professional facility when my time in the UK, the printmaking studio. And I got to try a huge range of printmaking processes. But in this exhibition, you'll see traditional copper plate etchings, monoprints, lithographies, and the most advanced one, you know, the photopolymer gravure, and silkscreen printings as well.
Okay, silkscreens, most of us will understand because we do
T-shirts, products and stuff, yeah.
Let's run through the different modes that you talk about. You first etching. So you did some etching.
Yes.
Which would require a metal plate.
Yeah, mostly in the forms of metals. And then what we do, we would either engrave onto the copper plate, and we would submerge it into an acid. Like, the whole chemical process takes forms where the acid bites into the metal plate, and that's where you get your image. And then we'll print them out onto papers. And then moving on to lithography is one of the, I would say, the predecessor to our commercial newspaper printing, which is quite interesting. You can see like how the printings of newspaper come from. But I sort of translate it into like a fine art process. And hopefully the weaver will sort of, you know, see.
What's the process for lithographs?
The lithographs is pretty much quite straightforward. You have an image, and then you translate them once again onto a printing plate. All forms of printmaking will need a printing plate, which we call the matrix.
This would be a metal plate?
This one would be an aluminium plate, coated with a layer of photosensitive solution where you can transfer your image. And then after that, you sort of, you know, once again, you have your image and you transfer it onto all different forms of media like paper or other products like fabrics and even like plastics possible.
With digital photography, I assume some of your prints are from that. What do you have to do to it so that it becomes your work, but it's not photography? I don't know if I'm making any sense or not. Photography is you take out a camera, you just aim at the thing, compose your picture, you take your picture. But yours are not pictures in the way we understand, like, selfies.
No, you can do a huge selfie. That's pretty fine. I think the individual element comes in is true. I think from the picture, I would sort of take out shapes that I find interesting. Like, especially depending on the composition, really. I would sort of, when I see an interesting shape, I would sort of like, you know, crop it out in terms of like whatever form it is. And then I would either enlarge it, take it out and collage into another piece of artwork or a different image, and then sort of like this whole idea playing.
Mix and match.
Yeah, mix and match. Yeah, pretty much.
Sounds a bit too much like candy, but you know.
And also I would say that it's also one of the reasons I do that is because I think it relates a lot to the whole idea of memory, how memories are always not always linear in terms of like how we see them. It always comes in and out, you know, at different times and different stages in life. You sort of, you know, go back and forth with it.
You mean memory is not fixed? It's something that we remember from the past because it happened in the past, so it's there.
I mean, sometimes it's clear and vivid, but sometimes it's mysterious and ambiguous as well. You know, some days you wake up, it's like, oh, did that actually happen? Or like, you know, especially when you're drunk or something, like you say, like, oh, what happened yesterday? Don't worry, like I'm not gonna alcoholic. I don't drink as well. I don't drink that much anyway.
Why the interest in memory? I guess where this question is leading to is your interest in memory and your exploration of memory in this format.
Funny enough, I think, once again, it comes quite naturally. You know, wherever I am, like, I will always have this sense of nostalgia or this kind of sentiment.
Deja vu.
Yeah. You know, like, I feel like places always conjures feelings, especially like memories. So whenever I'm at different places, I will always think of how I would relate to that certain object or that certain thing that's in the place. And then that sort of just sparks me off into like making artworks. So it's like a constant inspiration.
I'm going back to what you said at the beginning about how when the music composers compose music, they have all this notation. How does your shapes and shades and images of places that you have now distorted or reshaped, reimagined, how do they allow us to understand that this is a piece about questioning memory?
I think through the abstractions, especially shapes and forms, and also the gestural mark makings, it sort of well, I hope anyway, I hope that it prompts the viewer to think of memory. Of course, I feel like people will always say, wow, that's quite an... You know, it's quite a obvious. Leap. Yes.
Oh, it's obvious.
Yeah, I mean, like, people will always say, wow, memories, you know, it's quite obvious, you know, we have it every day, but are we that aware of it? Or, like, the nature of it, you know, sometimes, like I say, vivid and clear at times, but mysterious and ambiguous at another. So we feel it, but are we really aware of it? That's what I would like to prompt the viewer to think about it.
Perhaps you can help us by taking a piece that you like the best. I know it's probably very hard for you to choose your best. It's like asking you to choose... You're too young to choose between two that you have. But choose one of your creations and just say, okay, this is what I did with it. And this is how you, as the artist, are trying to explore this question of memory.
When the viewer goes into the gallery, they would see straight away on their left is a series of work called Labs, comprises of 15 prints, which are... You know, like I said, the shapes are cropped out, abstracted, and like collage in many different ways. And I hope, and I feel that through that, the viewer would start to, in a way, once again, feel a little bit lost in a good way. They would start to question like, oh, this is interesting. You know, why did he do that? And once they are curious about it, they would sort of want to know more. And they would, you know, either talk to the gallery or talk to me or read the text on their right. And... just be interested about it. And hopefully through that text or like through talking to, you know, one of the galleristas in Snow, Lisa, in our sub-project or me, they would sort of have, you know, a better idea of like more curious about memory.
In this series of 15, are there lots of similarities to the point that we can see that they are similar, but they are not similar?
Yes, definitely. You know, like you can see like,
Some
things are repeated. You can see like the images from landscape relates to each other simultaneously in some way, but at the same time being distorted as well. So the viewer will have a good time seeing like, oh, I see this in this picture, but not that one. Or like, I see this one, but in another picture throughout the whole exhibition.
Now, because this work's done over quite a few years, 2013 to 2016, right? And there are 80 plus works in this exhibition. How are all these works arranged? Are they arranged in a chronological order?
Like I say, it was quite a debate between, you know, like me and the gallery,
the curator
as well. Yes, we were talking about what was the best way to show this. And of course, the chronological order came in mind. In the beginning stage, you're like, oh, like it's quite interesting to put it in a linear way where the viewer could see like a timeline. But then as the process moves on, exactly, just like memory, it gets things interrelate a lot, and we sort of felt that why not, you know, just put the works in a non-linear way, but at the same time having a strong conversation about memory as well. And as we sort of, you know, as we talk more about it, and it was quite clear that we would display it in a non-linear way, but at the same time still having a strong connection to like all the works done in different periods of time.
Because it's done non-linearly, so it's not chronological, you began with images of places in UK, now places in Malaysia. Do they mix, meaning that in a particular series, some are Malaysia and some are from the UK? Or are they images from Malaysia, images from UK, and to some extent they stay separate?
No, funnily enough, the images that I've been using for this exhibition is all from KL. The reason is that because... it's actually only two images in KL that I chose to work on and create this body of work. The reason is because it all started when I was in the UK. Like I said, we have the freedom to explore ideas and things that we are really interested in. And one of the concept came to mind was like, which place struck me the most to me personally? And, you know, like any student being abroad, they will always look at home in a different way. You know, like when you're out of it, you know, you sort of appreciate the things that you take for granted. I'm no different to that. I have that feeling. And I was thinking to myself, like, which place has that strongest connection to me? And that's why I chose the two main images and which I decided to work with. And
can you tell us?
It's actually two landscape pictures from a reservoir near my home, which I used to go to a lot when I was younger. And yeah, I just took two images from that and, you know, translate them into prints and drawings, paintings, and yeah, created a whole body of work from it. So.
And everything is monochromatic.
Yes.
Why that choice?
I think monochromatic is inherently...
So you are also dressed quite monochromatically.
Thank you. I feel that it inherently like has this sense of nostalgia, you know. But like I say, it all relates to my whole approach to art making, which is like how a composer would write down his notes in like black ink. Pretty much, it's not more. I wouldn't say completely about emotional responses, but it's not solely. But you know, like oh, I use the color black just because I feel sad, or like use the color white just to feel like you know purity resembles purity and stuff like that. All those emotions do overlap in my practice. But like I say, the main approach to what I do is like I said, it's more towards like an investigative approach.
And you'll be holding, as part of this exhibition, a workshop. What would you be doing in this workshop?
This workshop, I will be conducting a monoprint workshop where for the viewers to sort of get their hands on into printmaking, because as the technique progresses into like other forms like etching, lithography, or like silk screen, it's quite dependent on equipment and of course skills as well, as you need practice. And I feel monoprint is sort of like the best entry point for everybody to sort of get their hands.
And what will they need to bring to the workshop?
Pretty much, you know, anything really, because anything that can be transferred onto another surface is technically called a monoprint, which is so broad and which is so fun for everybody. Because when they say, many of the times people say like, oh wow, printmaking, you know, it's quite daunting because I don't have the particular skills or like knowledge or you know, especially equipment. But you know, like it doesn't have to be like that, and that's why a few monoprints, you know, would be very fun and interesting for everybody to learn of, you know, regardless of experience.
Since you're making prints, how much attention do you pay to the photographs? I assume because of your age, you use a digital camera.
Yes, that's right.
But when you were going to school in America, in England, did you get the chance to go into a dark room?
Yes, actually, I got to. We have the facility to develop our own photographs, but for me, I didn't go into that much because what I needed was just like a basic photograph, and for me, I would then, you know, technology, you know, edit it through Photoshop and then translate it out into, you know, into prints.
The first image is not the most important. It is important, but not the most important. Hey, Mark, thank you very much for coming in.
Once again,
pleasure,
thank you for having me.
Mark Tan, the artist of the exhibition Arrangements and Exhibition, which opens today at our Arts Project Gallery and ends on April 22nd. Gallery hours are Tuesday to Saturday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. In conjunction with this exhibition, Mark will be hosting a monoprint workshop on Saturday, April 15th at 11:30 a.m., followed by a talk at 3 p.m. As places are limited, please contact our arts projects to make a reservation. You've been listening to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.